This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stefan Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And it is time for another edition of Female First, which means we are once again joined by the fantastic, fabulous, wonderful Eves. Welcome, Eves.
Thank you for the warm welcome.
Yes, always. You know, we love to have you. And you just gave us the most amazing, like, book show.
It was great.
It was fantastic, listeners. We got like a little demonstration of all these books that Eves picked up. But yeah, last time we had you on, you were talking about how you were going on a trip. And we also just talked about how like condensing that in small talk is stressful. So I'm going to ask you to do it again. Can you give some highlights of your trip for the listeners, please?
Well, I'm happy to. I really am. It's fun recapping because I feel like something new when you talk about something you did to people that is a long story multiple times, I feel like something new really does come out each time. But, and also there's so much to process too. So it's like helping me process. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate it. I'm not complaining about it. But yes, I did go on my trip. I was away for a month. I went to Zambia and South Africa and Botswana for a day just to go to a park to see lots of lovely animals. And it was very eye-opening. Everything was beautiful. All the people were wonderful. And I felt very welcome everywhere I went. I had lots of lovely like outdoor and nature experiences, which y'all know that I love. But I also had lots of lovely different kinds of city experiences in Zambia and in Cape Town as well. And I really enjoyed my time there. I got to hike. I got to eat so much food, which is one thing I'm readjusting to, like having to cook myself. Because I didn't do any of that. I was in a hotel a lot of the time. So, but yeah, I didn't do any of that while I was there. So currently readjusting and readjusting to the weather because it is getting cold here in Atlanta. But yeah, everything. The quick recap is that everything was great. I was there for a month, had a great time, want to go back, miss it, of course. I still am in those post-travel, I'm still in the post-travel blues phase.
Yeah.
And also seasonal post-travel blues rolls really well into seasonal depression, you know what I mean?
Perfect. What an amazing combo.
What a combo. 1-2 punch.
Perfect.
No, but seriously, I did have a good time.
Yes. We were lucky enough to hear some tales, some perhaps perilous kayak times, but yeah. Also, yes, you picked up a lot of books while you were there. And last time you were on the show, you said, like, I think I'm going to get some inspiration when I'm there. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe...
I did. And that I did. I said that too, and I had to hold myself accountable while I was there. That's another reason. While I was perusing those bookshelves so hard when I was there. And there were plenty of people that did come up, like, while I was looking through things there. I went to a few museums, went to a few bookstores, just so everyone knows, and got a lot of information there and inspiration about people. Lots of people I would love to look more into. Also people who stories aren't necessarily as accessible to me because of language reasons, but also because they may not have been, have substantial biographies written on them and may not have that much that is publicly available knowledge beyond the family that may have survived them if they're not living anymore. But I did get lots of inspiration and brought that here today, which I'm excited about. There are loads and loads of people on the African continent and in Zambia and in South Africa specifically, which are the places that I went, that are have deep histories in anti-colonial resistance, anti-apartheid movements, Black consciousness movements, gender-based movements, all of those things. So there is a wealth of information that I could delve into about those things and that everybody can research. Plenty of figures who are well-known and some that aren't so well-known.
Yes. And I know Samantha and I are very, very excited as you work through these books of getting updates.
Yes.
Seeing what comes from that, hopefully on this segment. But in the meantime, who did you bring for us to discuss today, Eves?
Today we are talking about Lillian Ngoyi. So she was the first woman elected to the National Executive Committee of the African National Congress.
Yes. And it once again is another amazing story that has so much like context and history and threads and all this stuff coming together and for this one person and how much she did and how much she accomplished. So I'm excited to delve more into it. Shall we get started with the history?
Yes, let's do. So she was born Lillian Masetaba Matabane in Pretoria in 1911, and that's in the northeast part of the country, just northeast of Johannesburg. So I think that we have talked about, or maybe we have talked about apartheid before in the Female First segments, but for a quick history context, there's a long history in South Africa of colonialism, goes back into enslaved people coming from many different parts of the world and landing in areas in South Africa. But fast forwarding a lot in that history, at a certain point, there was the Union of South Africa, which united British colonies in Southern Africa. That was formed in 1910, and that was a self-governing dominion that was still within the British Empire. So under colonial rule, there was slavery. There was, like I said, there was racial discrimination as well in the aftermath of that. Continuing against non-white people, because there was a mix of many different cultures, as is what often happens through enslaved people arriving in a location. But that was also included and encoded in legislation. So what would be considered apartheid era began in South Africa in 1948, although there were precursors to that era, of course, and still vestiges of it that continue there today. The National Party at that point enshrined racial segregation and white supremacy as federal policy, and apartheid touched all parts of life. So that was education, labor, housing, politics and voting, transportation and travel, access to public facilities, et cetera, et cetera. That system separated people into the whites, the Indians, the colors, and the blacks. So many acts over the years restricted non-whites' freedoms. that led to things like censorship, disenfranchisement, violence, forced removals, and poverty. And that also, of course, on the flip side, led to plenty of resistance, anti-apartheid movements, organizations, and leaders, and uprisings of thought, Black consciousness, things like that. So that is the, that is apartheid 101 light. just for a little context of the era and the environment that Ngoyi was born into. And she has siblings, but she was the only girl. Her mother was a domestic worker. Her father was a miner and a laborer. And he died of lung disease. But she went to primary school at the Kilnerton Institution, which was a Black Methodist school. She did end up leaving school early and began training as a nurse at the City Deep Mine Hospital. During that time, she married a man who was a van driver named John Gerard Ngoyi, and they had a daughter. And so she later became a seamstress and a domestic worker. But in 1937, a few years after the couple married, John died in a car accident. And she ended up supporting her children and another child who I believe was her niece and her mother. So she did get a job as a machinist working in a clothing factory. And she worked there from 1945 to 1956. And it was at this point and through her work at the factory, we began to see her activism and her participation in the political sphere. She joined the Garment Workers Union of the Transvaal. And at the time, Solly Sachs was the leader of the Garment Workers Union. And he has his own history and complications and controversies. He was a labor and anti-apartheid activist himself. He became secretary of the Garment Workers Union in 1928, which itself had already a storied history that in early parts of it, too, was limited to white people and to men, and it did change over time. But women workers in the industry did organize at this point through the union, which advocated for better working conditions for the clothing workers. And Sachs himself was arrested several times and in 1952 was banned from multiple organizations under the Suppression of Communism Act, which does come up a lot in this era under apartheid, in terms of how different people who were speaking up and who were resistant against apartheid were persecuted under that banner. But that was enacted by the Parliament of South Africa.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99.
Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So garment workers, including Ngoyi, protested against his banning, and her participation in the GWU, the union, helped radicalize her. Sacks soon went into exile in England, where he did anti-apartheid work still. And meanwhile, in South Africa, there was introduced legislation that restricted the rights of Black and so-called color people that were still being passed. The Natives Labor Act of 1953, for instance, banned strikes by Africans. So this was the spirit and the energy that Ngoyi became a part of as a worker and as someone who was in the union and as someone who had her consciousness at the time. She was involved in the Defiance Campaign, which was launched in 1952. It was a huge, really involved across race, across time in different places in South Africa, campaign of resistance against those apartheid laws. And the National Party government had come to power in 1948, which we spoke about a little bit earlier, and had turned up the dial on a lot of the discriminatory legislation. And as a part of that Defiance Campaign, there were boycotts, rallies, and other forms of civil disobedience. The ANC had kind of turned more to strategies and tactics that involved things like civil disobedience at the time. And of course, this was a huge campaign with many thousands of people being involved. Many were arrested for doing things like entering segregated spaces that were just for white people, doing things like violating curfew, for going places without passes, and for defying other apartheid regulations. Ngoyi joined the African National Congress during the Defiance Campaign, so the ANC was really focused on its opposition to apartheid through that political action and civil disobedience. She took training for volunteers, and what seems to be remarked about her herself and her character is her oratory skills. So she seemed like she had a really great ability to give really passionate and compelling speeches that were able to get people riled up to the anti-apartheid movement and to actually becoming involved in that movement themselves. So I think, as everyone listening will probably realize by now, that there are some parallels between the kinds of actions and organizing and resistance that's happening here and that happened in the United States. And there are a lot of scholars who draw those lines between the figures and the movements that are happening in both places, the civil rights movement in the United States and the anti-apartheid movement here happening in South Africa. But yeah, so she became really active in the movement. She led protest rallies in major cities as well as in rural towns across the country. In 1952, she was arrested for being in a whites-only section of a post office and attempting to send a telegram to the prime minister. But eventually, she was elected as president of the ANC Women's League. And she attended a conference that was held by the Women's International Democratic Federation. She traveled to Europe. to Russia and to China as a delegate of the Federation of South African Women, which she joined and was elected as its president in 1956. And it was also that year that she got her first and became the first woman elected to the National Executive Committee of the African National Congress. So as we do see a lot of times in the stories of these women that we talk about on Female First, about how they travel overseas and seem to be truly invigorated by, obviously have to put in a lot of work to get to the point where they are traveling internationally and are delegates of their causes, but also are clearly invigorated by what they see overseas, whether that's like, okay, they see the different ways that women are being treated. They see the different consciousnesses of the countries that they're going to and how active people are involved in resistance movements. They see the kind of tactics and strategies that people are using overseas. And then they come back to the place that they left and see what's happening there and have a certain perspective on it now after they've done their travels and been to these conferences and spoken with different people and met different people. And so she comes back to South Africa and continues to do her work, continues to put in work. On August 9th, 1956, a big touch point or flashpoint in her history in the resistance movement, she, along with other women like Helen Joseph, Sophie Williams, and Rahima Musa, led a women's pass march to the Union buildings in Pretoria. And actually, August 9th to this day in South Africa is celebrated as National Women's Day. So the government was planning to extend pass laws to African women. Black men were already required to carry passes. And these pass laws require African men to carry documents validating their identity and permissions. And the way that that looked did morph over time to where there were all these documents and there was a pass book. So exactly how that panned out did change. But at the end of the day, they were required to carry documents that validated their identity, where they were allowed to be. So this really infantilizing, paternalistic, patriarchal method of control over where people could be and even who they were, you know, they were designed to control their movement and to reinforce segregation. Many people were arrested for violating pass laws out of necessity. I mean, of course, this having to have pass laws disrupted their lives in many ways, including where they could work, the time that they could spend, or how they were able to spend time with their family. But early attempts to make women carry pass books resulted in protests. Women were like, nah, we're good. we're not here for having pass laws. So they were able to, through their actions, avoid having to be subject to these laws for a while. But it was clear that the government planned on still extending pass laws to them still in the 1950s. So, like, they put in legislation, and we do plan on extending these pass laws. That's how clear it was to women. So in the 1956 protests, there were estimated to be around 20,000 women. They carried a bunch of petitions to, and that was across races. So they carried a bunch of petitions to present to the government. Ngoyi knocked on the prime minister's door to give them to him. And this was a huge demonstration and an important one. But there were also other anti-pass law demonstrations throughout the country in rural places and in other cities. But they were eventually subjected to pass laws. This 1956 march on August 9th did do a lot to uplift women like Ngoyi who were participating in it and brought a lot of visibility to the issue. So in December of 1956, which was just months after the march, Ngoyi and other anti-apartheid activists were put on trial for treason. The police arrested around 156 people who were charged with high treason, and that included people from the ANC, the African National Congress, Indian Congress, the Congress of Democrats, the Congress of Trade Unions, and the Colored People's Organization. They were accused of being active in the liberation movement and creating a freedom charter with the goal of establishing a communist state, among other accusations. So, as you would probably imagine, You know, this lasted a while. The treason trial lasted until 1961, and Ngoyi was acquitted. But in 1960, she was arrested again under the state of emergency that was declared after the Sharpeville massacre, which was a massacre where police killed people who were protesting past laws. And she spent 5 months in prison then, some of that time, which she was in solitary confinement. And in the next decades, she was subject to more arrests and to more bans. So you see in her story the chokehold, like that tight grasp that was placed on her by authorities in these last time of her life after she had this snowball of momentum up to her strong role in the resistance movement to the point where people like Nelson Mandela were acknowledging her in public spaces and public speeches. And of course, there were plenty of people who also were a part of the movement and who read and who attended her speeches, who knew the role that she was playing and really speaking up against and taking action against the apartheid legislation and state. So the story is arrest after arrest, and ban at that point. In October of 1962, she was issued banning orders that confined her to her home in Orlando Township. Under the order, she couldn't attend public gatherings or meet with more than one person at a time, and that included other banned people. She couldn't converse with them. That ban lasted 5 years, but then was renewed for another 5 years in 1967. And there was a brief period when she did travel after that, but that was rolled back pretty quickly because she was still on her soapbox, as she rightfully was. And of course, she continued to do when she had that brief period of freedom. But the ban was reimposed in 1975. And that rolled into her death, unfortunately. She did die on March 13th, 1980, which was not long before her five-year ban was about to expire. So if you think about, we know that bans and confining people to spaces is one power that the state uses in order to keep people from being active in these resistance movements. Of course, the ban restricted her ability to work and to make money, though she did try to make a living sewing. Of course, that was difficult for her. Apparently, she says that the police who were there would try to would intimidate customers when they would come by. So there were some donations that were coming through, but she wasn't the most well-supported person. It also restricted her ability to travel, of course, to participate in political activities, and generally to live life freely. And the access that other people had to her speeches, to her work, to her writing, to the thoughts and ideas that she shared was also limited. So her life was confined to this spot, but also other people were confined because they were no longer able to access the resources that she had so freely given in the years leading up to that. So that clearly severely impacted her ability to do the work, in turn impacting the movement itself. So that is Lillian Ngoyi's story, part of the larger story. But there were a lot of women who were clearly involved in the movement at the time. And she did have a funeral that was well attended. But I did read, there was a remark by someone who was speaking at the funeral that, like, this should be even far more well attended if you all knew the work that Ngoyi was trying to do, that she was trying to get us, or the people, off of their seats and into action and really standing up for what they believe in at whatever cost may have been necessary, that cost including the meaning out of violence against them and potentially even death. So she was well respected and acknowledged in her lifetime, though, as unfortunately stories often go, could be more well acknowledged today. And did have a memorial and has had a couple of things named after her. So she has been acknowledged in some ways. But I'm grateful to be able to share her story today in this way, because of course, as we talk about all the time, it's always helpful to continue to uplift stories that may be less well known by a lot of people.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Well, I will say, growing up in small town LJ, Georgia, small town Georgia, had never even heard of the apartheid until I started college. And even then, I just pretended I knew because everybody knew it was a big, like, there's so many of my friends that knew. And I was just like, yeah, what? Yes, I absolutely know what's going on, and went through and had to study for myself what this was and what the movement was, and how actually during my time in college, it was still a pretty big conversation, and the injustices that had happened during that time and the people who were affected. Like the conversation, the fact that it took me that long to understand the depth. And so still learning, trying to learn about the people in this movement and the warriors and the fighters and the people who were leaders is still amazing that I'm like, yeah, I had no idea this happened. I didn't know this conversation. Like, I know the broad scope and some specific stories. That's about it. But in the bigger scheme and picture is like, oh my God, we have missed out on so much conversation and the truth and the history and the amazing people who really were the backbone of this movement, including the fact, like, the understanding of trying to figure out what banning was. Like, I know the concept of banning, but this was almost like torture, the stalking, the constant harassment, making sure that she wasn't able to make money, making sure that she wasn't able to see people. That level of being harassed, this is like, oh my God. Again, this is torture. I feel like it should be a little to that. This is is a crime. This is a crime against humanity. Let's have a conversation about why this is so important, about the fact that they stripped her of her livelihood consistently. Like, it wasn't just, oh, it's almost over, we're going to do a new thing now. Let's just find another way to make sure you're banned because it's working, because we're killing your spirit, essentially. Obviously, I'm glad her story has come out, and I'm glad we get to see. Thank you so much for bringing these stories and these conversations in this historical context, because, yeah, it's so important that we're having a moment to acknowledge, holy shit, this has been in the dark too long.
Yeah. And I hate that. It's such an inspiring story, and she did so much, and she fought so much and just resisted so much. And then I hate that access to what she did was limited. And as you said, especially if she's a good orator, like, that was lost in a way, or people weren't able to get that information, which is also part of, this sort of trying to minimize and make sure, like, this resistance doesn't go anywhere. But that I just hate that. So I'm very glad that, yes, we're sharing the story, that you brought it to us. But it is one of those things where I'm like, oh.
It's bittersweet. Yeah. Every time.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that hit hard the way you said that, Samantha, about it killing her spirit, because I think we saw how much spirit she had throughout her life, and the work that she put into it, and how this was intentional harm that the state was committing against her, and how just doing that to her, the killing her spirit, as you put it, Samantha, affected so many other people. And even though we see how Lillian Ngoyi, in her quotes, really was looking forward to a point where things changed and apartheid no longer had its hold on the country, she wasn't able to see that transformation that didn't occur till the 90s by the time that she had died. So it is very, I hate to end on, I think I'm being so hesitant because I hate to end on a point where, like, you know, it's very real, Samantha, that it is killing her spirit. But it really pains me to say that, because I don't want to not acknowledge the fact that she lived such a full and beautiful life in so many ways, you know, had family that she was able to connect with, and the extended family that I'm sure that she created through the movement work that she did.
I do hope that they do hear that we are celebrating the amazing work that she did and continue to do, and obviously kept fighting when she could. That's the biggest part to that, is that when she had that small break of not being banned, she's like, all right, let's keep going. I mean, that is a fighter in itself, and in that conversation, because I know so many would just have backed down, but she didn't. She kept pushing, she kept trying, but she was also trying to protect her family and herself during these times, during a time where it was really, really dangerous for her and them. So it is. It's definitely that level, I guess, in that moment of like, damn, the government sucks. End of story. All right, I'm done. I'm going to be on a list somewhere.
You already are.
Oh, yeah. The file's been started. It's created. Sorry to tell you.
I'm going to go hide now.
Oh, well. I did like that. I hadn't really thought about it, but I did like that you included Eves, that a lot of these female firsts do include travel and kind of like changing your perspective through travel. Yeah. So that's, somewhat of a more upbeat note to end on, because that, I mean, you're right. It's true. And I think that's very, since you just got back on this trip, that's one of my favorite things about travel too, is when you come back and you're like, oh, I have all these things to think about and reevaluate and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you pointed that out. I hadn't really picked up on that, but you're right.
Thank you. I'm sorry. This is one of those moments. So for everybody listening, I was talking to Samantha and Annie before this started about how I get too deep when I'm telling people about somewhere I've been to. I immediately jump into the deep sides of the conversations and sometimes try to have to skip over the surface level stuff. And that might be a bit much for some people who aren't expecting that. and who don't want that. So I was trying to temper myself with my response to that, Annie. But it did make me think of somebody I was just talking to who asked me, like, how is the Eves today who is here now different than the Eves who left and was at the airport the day you left? And I was like, that's how I was like, I have 100 million things to say about that, but also I have no idea how to answer that question. Yeah. So that's what you just said just now, Annie, made me think of. And I was like, let me roll it back on that a little bit. But it's a really good point to think about when we're thinking about these female firsts. Like, even if it's not travel, the moments that change the people who we're talking about and the moments that change us, like, what are some of the things that really shake us or invigorate us or make us think differently about something? And that doesn't have to be a really big moment. It doesn't have to be traveling halfway across the world either. It can be something as simple as a conversation that you have with somebody at a bar. So yeah, I really like that, Annie.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a good follow-up point as well.
I do want to hear the answer later of that question that they asked you. So, but we'll put a pin in that.
Okay.
Yes, and thanks once again for coming on. We know you're a little still recovering from your travel, so we really appreciate you being here.
Happy to be here as always.
Yes, yes, and we love having you. Can you tell the good listeners where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me online on the internet, on Instagram at notapologizing, and on Twitter at Eves Jeffcoat. And I realized that I don't ever spell that and that people may not know how to spell it. So that's YVESJEFFCOAT. That's how you spell my name. And you can also find me at evesjeffcoat.com. So you can go to my website to find all those things. If you forget or have no idea how to spell my name after I just spelled it, and you don't want to rewind the 15 seconds. And also on plenty of episodes of Sminty on doing other segments of Female First about a bunch of different women in history who changed things, who lived phenomenal lives, and who had stories that I think are 100% worthy of sharing and that we all have things to learn from.
Yes. Agree. So listeners, go check out all of those things Eve just listed. You can do the 15 back. It's easy if you need to. And if you would like to contact us, you can. Our email is stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram at Stuff Mom Never Told You. Thanks as always to our super producer, Christina.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.